The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Art of Transformation with your host, Mara Evenstar. Transforming our world can seem to be an overwhelming task. However, there are universal patterns of change that can be worked with personally or collectively. Join us as we explore conscious transformation. Now, here is your host, Mara Evenstar.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mara Evenstar, and I welcome you once again to The Art of Transformation. When we think about changes that are needed in our world, I often think about the financial systems that are not set up to truly support and sustain all humans. Like, you ever hear of like the 99%, right? So here is an area absolutely ripe for transformation. And like many of our other conversations on this show, we look at the personal within the context of the culture and the systems. Regardless of your financial situation, how financially literate are you? Do you know how the financial systems work? Do you even know what your money is doing? So today we're chatting with Angela Barbash, who is founder of Reconsider, an impact economy research and development firm. She's also co-founder of Revalue, a registered investment advisory firm, and helped co-launch the Detroit Regional Chapter of the Social Enterprise Alliance. Angela is passionate about empowering people through knowledge, and she's a thought leader in financial education, local investing, social impact investing, and creating ways to serve values-driven investors. So I met Angela a few years ago at EntreSlam, which is an entrepreneurial storytelling competition, which she won first place, by the way, and it was great fun. And since then, our paths have been crossing in very interesting ways, both personally and professionally. I'm happy to introduce her as one of the influencers of my sphere. So welcome, Angela.
Thank you, Mara, for having me today.
Yes, it's really great to be doing this. So in my mind and experience, you really are a thought leader and a change agent and helping to lead the way to a more equitable and sustainable economy, both locally and, of course, in the larger ecosystem. And there's usually a personal story there when people are moving in the world and making changes such as these. So what is your story?
Thanks for asking. I actually am an anthropologist that went into financial advising, and so I had a different perspective as a financial advisor in coming from a social science background, where I really paid attention for the last decade as an advisor to the things that my clients were saying sort of across the board. And I noticed that even for how different they may be, their views or politics or their goals in life, they often were really wanting the same thing, which was to have some transparency and honesty in their financial systems and wanting to really understand what was happening, especially through the 2008-2009 financial crisis. And so coming out of that crisis, I had clients that were asking me questions that they had never asked before. Like, you know, why can't I invest in a business on Main Street? Why aren't, you know, I'm interested in investing in solar panels and taking my house off the grid. And why isn't that a part of my portfolio? How do I do that? How do I invest in solar panels on my neighbor's house? You know, things like that. You know, how much food should I have stored in the case of an emergency? You know, things that were really practical and relevant questions, but were never previously a part of the financial advising conversation. And the more questions they asked, the more I tried to find answers for them. And the more I tried to find answers among my peer network and my professional network, the fewer answers I found. And that really sent me on a hunt in 2009 and 10. and 11 to try to find information and people who were also asking these questions and trying to find answers. And that sort of awoke a passion inside of me to really be a part of the change, which I started to see evidence of, but it was just a trickling of evidence. It wasn't an avalanche, and now it's become, you know, a tsunami wave of change in a lot of different respects, not just financial systems. But that really, yeah, that really lit my fire. It was, I'd have to say it was my clients.
Wow. And what was happening with you when the financial crisis hit in 2008 and 2009? How were you writing through that?
It was interesting. I actually was working for a very large firm at the time. I was managing my own office. I was managing about $15 million and about 100 families. And it was emotionally devastating to watch families be in my office, and despite my best efforts to try to protect them in the fall of 2008, there was very little that I could do because of the way the industry is structured. There were some pressures put on us as advisors, and it wasn't just at my firm. This is an industry-wide issue. There are pressures put on advisors that are really counter to the protection that clients need and the aims and goals of clients. It has to do with how advisors are paid. And so so it was pretty devastating to watch, you know, despite my best effort to try and protect my clients and still maintain my job, clients were losing massive amounts of money. And it seemed to not matter what we put them in, they were losing money, and they were just breaking down in my office, you know, because retirement plans were out the window, kids couldn't go to college, people were losing their houses for things that were completely outside of their control, and it was just absolutely devastating. And I found that a lot of my peers really emotionally distanced themselves from what was happening, and just sort of took this attitude that it wasn't their problem, there was nothing they could do about it, and they weren't going to get emotionally invested. And that was even more devastating for me to see that kind of callousness in the industry. And I started asking questions of my superiors. You know, I had for a long time been doing research on the underlying issues in the industry with mortgage-backed securities and derivatives and, you know, the terms we've all come to understand today. I was aware of those things and those concerns going back to 2004. And so as these things started to kind of come out into the open in 2008, I was asking my superiors more and more questions, and I was consistently told, the higher up the chain of command I went, I was told the same thing, which is, we don't pay you to research and to be an analyst, we pay you to sell. And if you're not selling, meaning if you're not bringing in new assets, if you're not selling things to people, then we will fire you under no uncertain terms. And finally, when I heard that from the managing partner of the firm I worked at the very top, and I had heard the same thing going all the way up the chain, that was when I felt like, you know, like everyone had gotten a memo except for me. And this is not the place. This is not the place for me to work in. I wasn't even sure that the industry was an industry I should be in. And so I quit. I left in the spring of 2009, and I went independent. I went to an independent firm and worked with people who, you know, were not saying those things to their clients, and they were putting their clients into, you know, long-term storable food and gold and silver, and, you know, helping them move their money out of the markets and doing things that my colleagues at my previous firm would not even conceive of. And so that's what happened to me. You know, and it was tough for our family too. Our mortgage company, you know, kind of blew up also. Our mortgage was suddenly in jeopardy, just like everybody else's. It was just, you know, everybody, I think, was hit. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was a pretty rough ride. I mean, luckily we didn't totally tank as in the Great Depression, but it certainly impacted many families. I know very few people who are not critically impacted by that particular downswing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And what would you say to people who, because I hear this too, when talking about financial systems, I also hear people say, well, I'm so poor, you know, I don't really have any money. And so, you know, I don't think that my decisions are that I don't have any power in influencing anything. What would you say to folks that take that stance?
Yeah, you know, that actually is probably the biggest epiphany that I have had in the last 5 years, now 6 years since, you know, going on seven since the correction, is that forever, you know, for the lifetime of the financial systems, we have all been ingrained, advisors, investors, clients, everyone across the board, even people without any money, we've all been ingrained to define capital as U.S. dollars or the things that you purchase with U.S. dollars, so houses or stocks or even gold and silver. It's all denominated in U.S. dollars. And that mindset is, I've now come to realize, is extremely narrow-minded, because that's financial capital. And financial capital is not, it's not even real capital, right? So it's just U.S. dollars are the thing that we use to exchange one type of capital for another type of capital. So I can take my vehicle, which has got metal and, you know, all of these elements in it, and it provides a purpose for me to get from point A to point B. I can sell that for U.S. dollars, and then I turn around and I trade those U.S. dollars for something else. So the U.S. dollars are what is actually called exchange capital. It's just the thing that we use to trade other things with. It's not real capital, though. And what happens when you as a society, and when we as a society agree to only look at that financial capital or that exchange capital as the only form of capital, is that it automatically infers that those who do not have financial capital they don't have any capital, right? So the 45% of Americans who are at or below the poverty line or receiving some type of public assistance because of their economic situation, they are now automatically disenfranchised from the financial system. They're not a part of it. And that has devastating societal effects for everyone, psychological effects, emotional effects for everyone. So the big epiphany that I had in all of my research and reading over the last 5 years is that narrow-minded view is really devastating to all of us. And if we expand our view and our definition of what capital actually is, then it becomes much more empowering. And I think of all of the different forms of capital, which is probably a whole other segment that we could do, just to talk about different forms of capital. I think of all the different forms of capital, the most important form that is most empowering is social capital. So my ability to call you and say, Mara, I am looking for someone who has this expertise. Who do you know? Or Mara, I have an idea that I would love to get your feedback on. Can we get coffee? Or Mara, I could use your help with a project for an hour. Could you help me? That's social capital, and I don't need any money for that. I just need to have a relationship with you where we're both mutually respecting and appreciating each other in that relationship. And that is suddenly, I mean, when you start valuing social capital, now everybody has equal opportunity for social capital, to attain social capital, to grow their social capital, and to leverage their social capital to get whatever else they need in life, to get their needs met or get their goals met. And that is a complete game changer. So that's where this gets really exciting for me personally and for a lot of other people in the ecosystem who are part of this change in the financial markets.
Yeah, and it's really broadening that view, too, to looking at things like wealth and abundance in totally different ways, not just only what can we do transactionally, but even looking at what we have and how we share and even just having a sense of good emotional feeling can also be a part of our wealth. And mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that those in the traditionally in the financial industry, we haven't been looking at those at all.
No, not at all. That's not even a part of the conversation. It's just
right.
Not, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Although in my conversation with Barry Lipscomb a few weeks ago, we were talking about also about how the conversation does seem to be broadening and how exciting that really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in about the 2 minutes we have left, can you tell me quickly what you think the state of financial literacy is in this country and why you feel that's important, that we are financially literate?
Yeah. So the tricky thing about the financial systems and our ability to understand and be literate in them is that it's kind of like the legal system. And it's like the legal system because the financial system is by and far controlled by and written by attorneys. So there's a reason why it mirrors the legal system. But it's like, you know, it's like me being able to sit down and recap for you all of the laws of the land and then the implications of all those laws. It's virtually impossible. And that's what has happened to the financial system. So I think that it's darn near impossible or almost idealistic for anyone, even professionals like myself, to be completely financially literate because of the way that the financial systems have been structured are so convoluted and so obfuscated and confusing that it's even an expert can't dice and slice it apart. But what the average person can do, you know, and this is anyone who doesn't have, you know, if they have financial resources or capital or they don't, it doesn't really matter. Just kind of the average person, what they can do is they can at least understand their own financial situation. So, and their own capital situation. So take stock of who are my social capital relationships, right? Who are those people that I can call up and leverage that relationship if I need to? And then what's happening with the money side? And so that's just starting with basic budgeting and knowing where your money's coming from and where your money's going. And if you're in credit or debt situations where you have credit lines, understanding what the interest rates are that you're being charged and trying to get to a point where you have no debt or very low interest rate debt. And I think that if we can just master those pieces as a society, then that is a level of financial literacy that will get us much farther down the road than versus trying to understand everything there is to understand about finance.
Great advice. Okay, it's time for a break. And when we return, Angela will tell us about the huge opportunity for transforming our economies and what she's been doing about it.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Domestic violence and abuse are experienced by both men and women in everyday life. If you have experienced abuse, know that you're not alone on your journey. Listen for Abuse, Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice with co-hosts Reese Zigazaga and Denise Watkus. We'll speak with survivors who have emerged safe and victorious and who are passionate about helping others reclaim their voices. Tune in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Think of anybody who does not want a better life and to be a better person? Think about that for a second. Almost everyone wants to be better, but how does one go about doing that? One thing that is making people better every week is tuning in to the Self-Improvement Show with Dr. Irene Conlon. All real change comes from within, but many of us don't know where to find the information or guidance we need to make the changes that bring about the improvement. Most of us don't know how to work within. Listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment. Are you ready for a health, life, and empowerment show in one? Then be sure to listen every week for Living Well with Ann Beal. Ann takes her long-running TV show to the Internet Talk Radio airwaves with guest experts and insight designed to help you live a healthy and successful life. By hearing from the experts and those who have found success, our goal is that you too will be motivated to do the same. Living Well with Ann Beal can be heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to The Art of Transformation with Mara Evenstar. If you would like more information about our program or just have a question or comment about today's episode, please send an email to rami.services@gmail.com. That's ARAMMAI.services@gmail.com. Now, let's continue with The Art of Transformation.
So welcome back, everyone. Today I'm talking with Angela Barbash of Revalue on transforming our economies and helping to build a better world that works for everyone. Angela, one of your early informational meetings that I attended and on your website are some stats that they really blew me away. And one of the quotes is, today we have $30 trillion in long-term investment money in the United States sitting in retirement accounts, insurance policies, annuities, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So once again, folks, $30 trillion. According to Michael Schumann's book, Local Dollars and Local Cents, less than 1% of that money is invested in small businesses. And even though 50% of our GDP comes from them and two-thirds of our jobs, I mean, talk about not investing in ourselves. This is a little bit mind-boggling that we've gotten to this place. So, Angela, can you tell us about the opportunity that you found within this challenge, within this huge thing that we've created, and what Reconsider and Revalue are really all about?
Yeah, so that's a great quote that you shared, and that statistic blew me away as well, even as a researcher and a financial professional. One kind of piece of context to give to this is that, very briefly, in the 1980s, you may remember that there was a divestiture campaign to divest of investments from South Africa because of apartheid. Okay. And this was a huge deal in the late 80s. And that actually was launched by students at Michigan State University. The students put pressure on the MFU to say, you know, look, you guys have this endowment fund that is invested in companies who are located in South Africa, who are supporting apartheid. We're against that, and we feel like you need to divest, or in other words, sell off your investments. That is the genesis of what is called the socially responsible investing movement, the SRI movement. That SRI now stands for social, they've changed the, trying to think, socially responsible impact investing, I think. But in any event, it means to invest along your conscious, you know, along with your consciousness and conscience. And so in 2002, there's a worldwide organization that tracks this movement now, called USSIF. And in 2002, they found that about 4% of the industry, of all of the investments, all the dollars in the world, were invested along SRI type, terms, where they are, you know, people are caring about environmental, social, and governance, issues and concerns. Today, as of 2013, which is the last year that we have complete data for, it is now about 18% of the industry. So a huge, I mean, epic social movement has happened within the investment world toward this SRI, you know, socially responsible or impact investing kind of aims, where we went from 4% to 18-19%, which is, I mean, epic in just like 13 years.
Yeah.
But what's really fascinating about that is that the impact that we were all having, those of us that were invested in this way, and all, where all this money was going, was largely overseas. It was going to what are often called third world countries, and into many times to nonprofit organizations, and the returns were not very high. You're making 0% or 2%, you know, what's called below market rates. And so it made everybody feel really good, and it did have huge impact. It has had huge impact in other parts of the world. But what we found is that coming out of the 2008 and 2009 recession in the United States, people started to realize that our local economies, our local industrial centers were starting to look a lot like third world countries. And when they started to dig into the data, they found, you know, people like Michael Schumann found that it was less than 1% of all of this financial capital was actually going to our own backyard.
Wow.
And that just didn't make any sense. I mean, if we want to revitalize our own economy and our own downtowns, and we want to have a quality of life that is viable, and considering how many people small businesses employ, like you said, 2/3 of our jobs come from businesses who employ less than 100 people, and 50% of our GDP comes from those businesses, then why in the world would we not invest in those businesses? Now, traditionally, the industry has said, financial experts have told people, it's too risky to invest in these small businesses around town, and you're better off investing in blue chip stocks or mutual funds or, you know, big corporate bonds or these very kind of big multinational corporation type entities. But we saw in 2008 and 2009 that those companies did not fare any better in the downturn than anyone else. And so people really started to question whether that made as much sense as everyone said it did. So there's that local investing piece, investing in your own backyard as a way to have an impact on the world around you, and that being part of the impact investing conversation. There's that happening. Then there's also just this, you know, like I said, this increase in interest of aligning your investment decisions with your values and investing in a more socially responsible or socially conscious sort of way, and dispelling the myth that if you choose to do that, that you cannot make any money. So that's been a long-standing myth, and in some cases it was true because we were investing in nonprofits and things like this that, like I said, were making 0% or 2% rates of return. Now that we have more than a decade worth of data, it's actually shown that when you invest in companies that are considered to be socially responsible, and you're buying their stock, you know, you can actually make equal, if not better, returns than the rest of the market, because socially responsible companies generally are running more efficiently. They are, you know, they're taking greater care with all areas of their business instead of, you know, just kind of dumping on the environment and then getting fined 5 years later for it. You know, they're not doing things like that. They don't have the costs that other businesses have because of their own irresponsibility. So as we've gotten more data back on what is happening and what the opportunities are, it's opening up this whole world of opportunity to everybody to invest, and to invest along your values, to invest in your own backyard, and to really make a difference for yourself and for the world around you.
Wow. And
that was a lot.
Yay, that is a lot. It is a lot. And can you talk a little bit about reconsider and revalue and what roles these organizations that you've built are playing in this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I get really excited about the data part of all this. So what we did was I got very, excited about all of this and very passionate, and I knew that we needed to start somewhere. So I launched, my husband and I actually launched Reconsider in conjunction and with the help of the community. So there's been a lot of hands on Reconsider. It's truly been a community supported effort. So we launched Reconsider in 2012, and what Reconsider has become is a research and development firm, and we have we're largely responsible for publishing white papers and research and supporting the movement, so to speak, in the Great Lakes region around local investing, community capital, social enterprise, what some people call sort of the new economy movement. And so we often are working with local municipal governments, economic development agencies, the universities to really get information out into the public about this whole movement and to define the terms and to raise people's awareness and to support all of the enterprises and efforts that are complementary to this to really rebuild an entirely new economy that has got consciousness baked in its center. So that's what Reconsider does. What came out of that effort is many things, but one of the things that came out of that effort was Revalue, which is a registered investment advisory firm. So what the public very clearly told us was that they wanted an investment advisory firm that was going to help them do this value alignment shift and stop supporting the companies that were against their own values and start supporting the companies that supported their own values. And in many cases, that also meant to invest in their own backyards as well. So we launched Revalue in 2013, and you can learn more about Revalue by going to our website, revalueinvesting.com, and you can see our services and what we're all about. But we're really about empowering people to be able to do that value alignment, that shift, and exposing them to the opportunities that are available to them now that they may have never been told about because their traditional advisor just doesn't know or isn't inclined or in some cases isn't even allowed to talk about it. And so that's been amazing. We have really brought some really cool things to the marketplace. So, for instance, up until now, there was never any course or training that you could take if you wanted to learn how to invest locally. Mm-hmm. If you're a high net worth investor, you could join what's called an angel network, or you could hang out with, high net worth angels and learn from them about how to invest in local businesses. But if you're just, a guy who lives in Ypsilanti, where I'm from, and you want to invest $100 into a local business, but you don't want to just throw it to the wind. You want to make sure you're making at least the best decision, the most prudent decision you can. There was no place for you to go to learn how to do that. So we created a training just for people like that, just to teach them the basics of how to make that decision, how to talk to their financial advisor about it, what all the implications were, understanding the risk, all of that good stuff. So that's the kind of stuff that we do, is really kind of shaking up the marketplace to say, look, you can do this yourself. You just need a little bit of guidance, and we're here to help. But you don't have to, try to find someone that's going to do it for you necessarily. And you don't have to be told no by your financial advisor either. So that just gives you a flavor of the kind of stuff that we do. But it's all really exciting. And everything that we have ever done out of Reconsider or Revalue has been directly requested by the community. We've never done anything that the community had not clearly said in surveys, in forums, in community meetings that they wanted us to do this, which is really interesting in and of itself, that we are a complete reflection of what the community wants.
Wow. And it's awesome that you can be that agile and be that responsive. And I know how exciting it can be, too, if you think you have this great idea and something that will help, and it just kind of lands flat because it's not actually what people are needing. Well, I know that I really appreciate the services that you guys have been bringing, and one of those is the fact that you kind of keep an eye on what's changing in the law around all around local investing and crowdfunding and all that, and it is really good to know that we can have that transparency that we're looking for. I know when I was in the market before, one of my biggest frustrations was that I would have these mutual funds, and perhaps there was a list of companies, but I would have no idea what those companies were actually doing, where my money was going, how it was being spent. I could have been funding a war, you know, for all I knew. Yeah. And so for me, that's been a really big deal. And so we have about 3 minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about what Reconsider or Revalue is up to?
Yeah, so I would say that, first of all, like I mentioned, our website for Revalue is revalueinvesting.com. Reconsider's website is timetoreconsider.com. Like, kind of like, I think it's time that we might want to reconsider some things. That kind of time to reconsider.
Yes.
And so you can pick up a lot of resource links off of the Reconsider website that, you know, lead off into all kinds of tangential topics. I would say the thing that is most exciting is that there's a couple of things. One is that we just launched new service plans at Revalue. After being out in the marketplace for about 18 months and hearing from the community on what we offered, what was of true value and what was of lesser value and what we could scale versus what, you know, in order to serve more people versus what was not really scalable, we reformulated our service offerings. And so if you go to our services tab on our website, you can see that we've got some packages, and we decided to move to a subscription model. So what's really unique and different about that, there's not very many firms in the country who have done this yet, but it is starting to catch on, is that normally when you go to a financial advisor, it's all about moving your assets to that financial advisor, and then they charge you either on every trade that you place, or they charge you an annual fee based on the amount of money that they are managing for you. So if you move $100,000 and you're being charged 1% per year, you know, that's your fee, $1,000. And the frustrating thing about that model is that it's very expensive, for one thing. That's a lot of cash to be sending out the door, and that's just if you have $100,000. So people with more money are sending more money out the door. Uh-huh. The other thing that is kind of a bummer about that model is that it excludes, back to our earlier comments about people without financial capital, it excludes all of the people who are, you know, in their 20s and 30s, or, you know, and they just went to school and they have no money and they're paying off student loans, or people who are in their 50s and 60s who lost everything in the recession, or whatever the circumstances are. If you don't have money to transfer to a firm, then they're not going to serve you. And they've been really clear about that. And so what we did was we came up with these subscription models, and the most popular one by far is what's called the Empowerment Plan, and it's $300 a year, so it's $25 a month is what that comes out to, and you get 2 hours of our time every quarter to use however you want. You can use it for education. You can use it for getting our advice on a particular issue you're having. And you get a subscription to our quarterly publication. And in that publication, we've got articles about, you know, kind of what's happening in the you know, marketplace, different things that are very interesting to values-driven investors. We have a list of all of the companies that we've done analysis on. So we essentially are opening up all of our research to our subscribers. And you know, just trying to provide as much value as possible in that subscription. Anna, and that really is.
Angela, I'm going to break us up here for another break.
All right, here it comes.
Yay.
Okay.
We'll continue talking about this. So it is time for another break. And when we come back, okay, we'll continue our conversation with Angela Barabash. We'll finish this on the subscription model and get a peek into what's new on the frontier of transforming our economy. So back in a moment with the Art of Transformation on Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
When you think of inspiring women, who comes to mind? Is it a visionary like Oprah Winfrey? Political or legal figures like Hillary Clinton or Sonia Sotomayor? Or how about entrepreneurial business leaders like Meg Whitman? No matter whom you might be thinking of, make sure to add one more to that list. Deanne DeMarco. She's the host of Today's Inspiring Women. Each week, Deanne turns you on to the next rising star in business and leadership and what their successes and challenges have been. Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Empowerment.
Now on Voice America.
The road you travel in life is never a straight line. It's more like running around in circles, which is not a problem when you make Richard Flint a part of your world. When you're standing next to Richard, you begin to see a lot less confusion and a whole lot more clarity. Things just start falling into place.
Every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
The Power to Be with Richard Flint.
Join us, and more power to you.
The Dr. Diva Show is on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's time for a compelling discussion about the issues that matter most to women and an inside scoop for the men who love them. Topics include entrepreneurship, relationships, work, and home life. Join Dr. Sony, Dr. Rhonda, and Dr. Pamela every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time for the Dr. Diva Show on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Your relationships, your career, your peace of mind.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
You're listening to The Art of Transformation with Mara Evenstar. If you would like more information about our program or just have a question or comment about today's episode, please send an email to rmi.services@gmail.com. That's ARAMMAI.services@gmail.com. Now, let's continue with The Art of Transformation.
So welcome back, everyone. I'm Mara Evenstar, and today we're experiencing how one person can make a difference in transforming even entire ecosystems by just changing the way they think and their actions, and even those that are as complex as financial systems. Angela, why don't you finish your thoughts on the packages that you are offering?
Yeah, so thank you. So I was sort of recapping what comes in that empowerment plan. And so, you get time, you get our quarterly publication. It's all very focused on sort of how you can take this information and use it for your benefit and really take charge of your own capital situation. And that has become really popular. And so that is kind of entry level for anybody, and it doesn't matter how much money you do or do not have. We have to ask how much roughly your net worth is for compliance reasons, but that's the only reason we ask. And then we've got a higher level subscription plan called the Trusted Guidance Plan. That's for people that have much more complex situations, they need more time, and they need that real kind of deep dive financial planning. So that's available as well, but it's still a flat fee. None of this is based on how much money you have, because we really don't care. You know, that's your business. So, that's new for Revalue, the subscription services, and we'll likely add a package here or there, make some tweaks, and fine tune it over the next year as we continue to get feedback from our subscribers and from the community on what they really want and need. But we needed a starting place, so that's the starting point there. so there are some other things that are happening. I know you're curious about what the new advancements are that are sort of on the horizon in the in this new economy and this new ecosystem. So one of the things that so I'll say that the having an investment advisory firm or financial advisors that would hold people's hands as they walk down this path was the number two requested service from the public, from the community in Michigan. And this was after polling many hundreds of people and talking to many thousands over the course of the last 3 years in public forums. The number one requested service was a local investment fund. People were very clear. They had been very vocal about their desire to go and look at their 401k options and see that there is a Michigan fund option where they could put 1% of their money or whatever it is into this fund. And they said, you know, I want to invest in local businesses, but I don't have the time to do all this due diligence and research. Why can't I just invest in Michigan businesses like I invest in multinational corporations through mutual funds? Well, that was not so easy to do. So it's like one of those things that if it was easy, someone would have done it by now. And it's not impossible. It's just not easy. And so we have taken the last several years to first build up momentum and market validation that the market could actually sustain a fund. And we've gotten a lot of information and data from the market, but we don't know for sure that there is enough capital and enough people interested in this in order to move it forward. When you talk about putting together a local investment fund like this, you're talking roughly $20 million or more. I mean, this is not, you know, like let's just launch a fund with a couple $100,000 and a few investors. You can do that, but it's not going to be sustainable because you have to pay professional staff to do the work. Mm-hmm. So so this is a really big endeavor. What has made this now a potentially possible endeavor is that it's not just the individual investors who are asking for this. Institutions are starting to ask for this. So we're starting to hear from foundations and local pension boards and nonprofits who are sitting on multiple millions of dollars in endowment funds and universities. And, you know, it's just kind of interest. They're saying, I think I would be, you know, we would be interested in that if we could keep our risk low, or, you know, everybody keeps saying we should, you know, we should invest in our own backyards also. And we're sitting on millions and millions of dollars and we're not doing that. And it just seems like that's the right thing to do because it meets our mission. And so the next question is, how do we make that happen? So Reconsider, being the research and development firm, that's where, that's kind of our sandbox. It's where we, you know, throw ideas against the wall and see what sticks and figure things out. And then if we can figure it out, we launch it out into the public and it becomes its own thing. And so Reconsider is working on striking a partnership right now that, if we're successful, we will be able to start the market research and the really deep legal work that has to happen in January of 2016 in order to see if we can get a fund launched. We first have to validate that investors are at the table. We have to validate that there are what kind of businesses and would be in this fund, and whether the businesses would be interested in this fund, whether they need capital, would they need this kind of capital. There's a number of things we have to figure out, but it's within the realm of possibility now. And so if we're successful and the market, you know, all that analysis proves positive, that the investors and the businesses and everybody's aligned and we can actually launch a fund, then ideally we'd be able to launch a fund in 2017. And that would be the first of its kind in Michigan, and certainly would set an example for the rest of the country of how this could be done. So that's very exciting. That's sort of on the horizon.
And can I ask quickly before you move on with the Michigan fund and the businesses that would be in there, are you looking to constrict that to triple bottom line and socially responsible businesses, or is this more wide open just so that we can get it going?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there certainly would be quality standards for all of the businesses that would be in there. And, you know, we kind of want to move to a point where instead of us saying, differentiating that these businesses are socially responsible and they are, you know, one out of 10 businesses is socially responsible, we'd love to get to the point where it's more like we're calling out the businesses that are not responsible and everybody yes. else is responsible, you know. So you can kind of do that by having good quality standards for the businesses that would be in the fund. So we wouldn't want any businesses in there that have bad labor practices or are polluting the environment or, you know, any of those things that would compromise the integrity of the business and the integrity of the fund and therefore compromise risk for the shareholders and for the investors. So I would say, in a sense, yeah, they would all, you know, carry some type of triple bottom line philosophy. But we wouldn't, you know, we couldn't restrict it to, like, just B Corp certified businesses because there's not enough of them, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then we're thinking to start that this would be a 4-county area. That's at least the geographic scope that we would need in order to have enough businesses to run through the due diligence process. But we might find out otherwise once we actually do the analysis. We might find out that it needs to be more like a southern half of Michigan or the entire state, or that we could do it in 2 counties. And then the idea is that once we have done it, then we would open source how we did it so that it can be replicated around the state and around the country.
Great. So what else? What else is emerging?
What else is emerging? I would say another thing that's really interesting and on the horizon is related to community solar. So we hear from investors and people who are interested in launching community solar projects. So we hear from investors saying, I want to invest in the community solar and in solar projects. And then we're hearing from people who say, I want to launch community solar projects and I'm looking for investors, right? So it's like you've got the two sides of the party are kind of, you know, searching around for each other with blindfolds on at a dance. And they're trying to find each other on the dance floor. And we get the privilege of being able to see both sides, and we know they exist. But what they haven't figured out yet is the terms of the deal and the structure of the deal. But I think from what I can see that they're getting closer. So the people who are interested in launching the community solar projects are figuring out what the deal structure has to look like, what legislation or regulatory act they have to use to launch it. Is it the state law? Is it federal law? And they're figuring out what the investors would really want to be able to be at the table. And then on the other end, the more that, you know, firms like ours are talking to investors and letting them know, you know, hey, if you want to invest in community solar, that could be possible within the next year, then that sort of gets the investors closer to the table. So I think that the first community solar investment opportunity is probably going to launch in the next year in Michigan, and that's very exciting. So we've got our eye on that as well.
Cool.
So that's emerging. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any other really short ones, like a 1 minute emerging?
1 minute is that I am, as of today, in my third trimester with our first baby. So that's, you know, personally very transforming and exciting. And it makes you, you know, being pregnant with your first child makes you look at the world a little differently and look at priorities a little differently. And if anything, it's making me even more passionate to continue the work that we're doing, because I know that the work that we're doing today is going to build the world that my child is going to live and thrive in tomorrow. So that is just makes me that much more dedicated to my purpose. So
that's a great way to wrap up, because I agree. That is so It makes it so real. Even though you know you want a great future for everyone, having those kids, it's like right in your face. So real. So thanks so much for joining me today, Angela.
Thank you for having me.
And I really would like to encourage listeners to go to the websites that Angela was speaking about for Revalue, revalue.com, and timetoreconsider.com.
And Revalueinvesting.com.
Okay, thank you. And because these are really, they're really great resources on there, and services, and a great way to just really find out what's happening, but most importantly, how you can educate yourself and how you can be in connection with others in your community that are like-minded, so that we really can begin to shift this from the bottom up and have our money used in valuable ways that are sustaining for all of us. So this is Mara Evenstar, and thanks so much for joining me today on The Art of Transformation. You can sign up for my organization's monthly newsletter at newmythworks.com, or contact me personally, visit my website at aramai.com, aramai.com. I would love to help you be the artist of your own transformation. I look forward to practicing this art with you on Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Voice America Empowerment Channel. Until next time.
Thank you for joining us for The Art of Transformation. Please tune in for another edition with Mara Evenstar next Wednesday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. We'll talk again next week.